Hello and welcome to the Emerald City Video Podcast.
Hello.
This is Russ and Zach, and we're doing a new release wall episode talking about the Justice League movie, which we just finished watching. As is often the case with new release wall episodes, we are going to be driving. And I have no idea why I can't make this thing disappear.
I think it's
on
probably
my screen.
Because the bracket is pressing against the ringtone. But.
Yes, so anyhow, Justice League. Zach, what did you think first off?
Slightly disappointed. I know everybody on the planet will probably laugh at this, but I like Batman vs. Superman a hell of a lot more. Mainly because this film was somewhere in between. It was, like, filmed with very, like, dark overtones to some to some extent.
Yeah.
But then had, like, random comedic jokes that, you know, were very, like, this is a comic book movie, guys. This is a comic book movie.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of, like, what I got from it. Which, I enjoyed it. But, like I said, kind of nowhere near as much as even Batman, or as much as Batman vs. Superman, which I still thoroughly enjoy.
Yeah, Dave Bratton, who's a regular listener / reader of my other page, is surprised by that. Probably a lot of people would be surprised by that if you don't listen to Emerald City regularly, but both of us actually really dug Batman v Superman.
Yeah.
And
to put it a certain way, I like it a lot more. I like it. Like, it, compare Citizen Kane to Plan B from Outer Space. Plan B from Outer Space is Civil War. and Citizen Kane is Batman vs. Superman. There's your poll quote.
I mean, for me, I really liked Justice League. I thought you could definitely see the tonal dissonance, and you could definitely see, I won't necessarily say you could see where each director was doing their thing, because I think that there's probably a lot of places where Snyder was being lighter than you would expect him to be.
Yeah.
Because certainly one of the things that he said during set visits and things like that is that he'd been building to a certain thing, and that certain thing was building to the tone.
Mm-hmm.
The final line in the movie, which I think everybody is going to attribute to Joss Whedon, certainly to me, I think, is probably Zack Snyder. I suspect that when they pitched BVS, that Zack Snyder also pitched Justice League, and inclusive in that outline was the final line of this movie.
Yeah.
There are, believe it or not, because this is a DC movie and there usually aren't, there are post-credits sequences. I won't spoil what they are. And in fact, we're going to steer clear of trying to spoil much of anything here, although probably at some point we'll wave you off and say, okay, now we're going to have that kind of conversation.
Yeah.
But there are two. There's a mid-credit and a post-credit. Neither of them is necessary to enjoy this movie. Neither of them is really explicitly setting up a sequel either.
No.
I think the post-credits one does, but
I mean, in so much as, like, there is going to be another film.
Yeah.
Which it's not like, it's like, shock!
Yeah. In terms of what Dave is asking, and this is going to be an interesting one to put on the Podbean site, because, of course, usually we don't live stream stuff and actually get responses.
Yeah.
Dave's asking about the emotional moments. I think the biggest emotional moments in this movie mostly come from Superman. Everybody else has essentially a role to play. It's a getting the band together kind of movie. And it's kind of a tried and true, like, I won't say Ocean's 11, because obviously that's a little too broad and comedic, but it's got that flavor to it, in the sense of, like, we're going to pull the band together, and then there's going to be the misdirect of people who maybe aren't going to come, and then they're eventually going to come, and ..
Shock.
But, yeah, I mean, you've got a movie poster with the T on it, so it's hard to...
But I mean, it is to an extent, like, when are they, you know, when are they going to come? So it's you know, it is, it's all those films, though, like, and of course they go...
I will say there is a moment in the movie that, and if you've listened to previous podcasts, you can probably suss out what I'm talking about by these clues, but there's a moment in this movie that is exactly what I wanted it to be. Like, 6 months ago, when I was mowing the lawn and thought, like, you know what? They should do this in Justice League. And I think there's a lot of little bits and pieces like that, that in this movie. This movie is much more fan service-y than anything we've seen, I think, in theaters, other than maybe Thor Ragnarok, in terms of, like, Thor having all those, like, little Easter eggs and stuff.
Yeah.
It doesn't have the, like, the same kind of Easter eggs that Batman v Superman did, where it's like, oh, look, the street name is this, and the this is this.
Yeah.
But it has, like, a lot of stuff that is meant for, and a lot of it's in the score. Danny Elfman's score incorporates elements of the 1999 Batman music.
Yeah.
He incorporates elements of the John Williams Superman theme. And so that is a part of the movie that I think does a really good job of, like, you know, you see those fan cut trailers where it's like the mashup trailer on the internet.
Yeah.
It's like you get weird headlines on BuzzFeed, like this fan made Justice League trailer looks better than Batman v Superman. And it looks like on some level they looked at that kind of thing and they said, like, okay, well, what is it that the fans want to see in this sort of thing?
Yeah.
And did it. And obviously there's an element of that that is frustrating, because if there's one thing that you can say about the Snyder Superman movies, about Man of Steel and BVS, is that he had a definite point of view and he had a definite thing he was trying to do. And, you know, we talked a lot in previous episodes about how he takes a big swing, and even when you miss, at least you tried something interesting, whereas there's a lot of action movies and franchise movies and comic book movies that are scared to try something interesting, so they make a good, serviceable adventure film, but it's just kind of there.
The problem is, and I'm going to be the Debbie Downer on this, unfortunately. Like, first off, this is a film I doubt they will. Maybe they will. I don't know. They'll come out with a new cut, like a director's cut or whatever. But the question is, who's the fucking director?
Yeah,
I felt like so many of those things, like, it was, you know, giving into fan service stuff, giving into, you know, and doing the kind of, like, the nods with the elf thing. It lost a lot of its, like, I'm sure people can argue this, one thing I always feel like DC films have is they have, like, the things that you look for in film, like, not in movies, not in entertainment, but in film. They have built-in scores, they have all those things, and I, like, I was missing a lot of that. Like, I know there was a lot of scores, but it felt, like, muddled. And, you know,
I will say that
weirdly, I had more of a problem understanding, more of a problem understanding Batman in this one than say Batman in any of the Nolan films, or even Bane in the last Nolan film.
Oh, you mean just the voice?
His voice. I don't know what, like, it was so, you know, was so computer eye or whatever the hell they did. And then also, like, it was also weird that he kind of kept it going when he was just hanging out with the Justice League crew, who all know who he is. But anyway, I guess the suit's on and whatever. But
yeah, I think that's right. Yeah. You need the visual cue. Dave's just saying the Snyder cut, the Whedon cut.
Actually, that'd actually be a pretty badass box set. I would take that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we've been talking a lot about, you know, different versions, like whether it be Brazil, you know, the studio cut, and then the Terry Gilliam cut.
Yeah, Richard Donner's.
Please, DC, please do that, because that would be pretty awesome.
And the funny thing is, like, everybody would be upset about it, and then everybody would buy it. but yeah, I mean, I would be shocked if there is a Whedon cut. Like, I think that there's a Snyder cut, and then Whedon was brought in to clean stuff up when Snyder was no longer able to...
Was his name on the credits?
Not as the director, no.
No, he was something, though?
He rewrote enough of the screenplay for his pickup shots that he, by Writers Guild rules, had to get a credit.
Oh, okay.
I believe it's the technical credit is screenplay by Joss Whedon and Chris Terrio from a story by Chris Terrio and Zack Snyder.
Oh, okay.
I could be wrong. It could have changed again, but that was what it was last time I looked.
Yeah.
For me, I really enjoyed the movie. I mean, Zach, it's actually, like, Zach and I could disagree because usually we don't.
Yeah.
Usually we're on the same page with stuff, and so you'll get half an hour of us kind of like dissecting the shit out of one, you know.
Well, this is where we really usually go into the, like, I mean, what was the last film that we saw? Oh, it was Thor. Yeah. Where it was like, we both enjoyed the film, and so what we had decided to do is we always end up just tearing it apart. Like, nitpicking.
This one, to be honest with you, I don't feel like there's a ton to dissect. Because it's, not because it's, like, perfect, but because it's a short movie, and it...
Was it? What's the timing on it?
Hour 40-something?
You know, I'll say, this felt longer to me than Batman vs. Superman.
See, I felt like it moved a lot. I mean, I didn't feel BVS was particularly long for me either, but I felt like it
BVS felt long for me, but, like, I enjoyed it. It's like, you know, it's like certain movies just feel long because they are. I mean, what was it, 220 or something
I think it was 230.
Yeah, something ridiculous. But there's so many, and I have to assume, because I don't know what else could explain it, I have to assume, like, the walking along the lake shots and things like that where... Diana and Bruce are having conversations, and there's just so much conversation. There's so much backstory where it's like, you know, what I don't understand with the DC guys do is that, like, I feel like with the Marvel films, and obviously, again, Hollywood, you know, very two different types of films, is that they just like, oh, there's a bad guy, we're going to go get it. We don't need the 50 years of fucking legacy. Like, with the, you know, I guess you get, like, I think you got that with the first two Thor films a lot more, where they're like, we have to explain everything to you guys. And it's like, no, you don't. It's a bad guy. Like, go beat him up. Like, I don't need to have the legions of, like, legacies and things like that. It didn't even get into, like, it didn't even feel like it got into comic book fandom, which I at least would give. It just got into the... Like, we're going to have a lot of voiceover and a lot of, which, you know...
Here's,
like,
where I disagree on that, is that the villain's backstory in this movie was tied into Cyborg's origin. And so, because Cyborg didn't have an origin film, I think a lot of that boils down to, like, this is less about the bad guy per se.
Yeah.
And more about, like, world building / setting up Cyborg.
But, I mean, you know, but when it's, I don't know, like, I feel like it didn't... It was unnecessary for that, because I think that... So Cyborg is a... He got into a car accident, and his dad rebuilt him using this thing. I feel like...
It's weird because I don't feel like it was a car accident.
Or an accident. I'm sorry, an accident. I didn't even... Yeah. You know, whatever. But, like, it was an... I mean, like, I just feel like with all the other crap that they had to kind of, like, build in, like, the bringing everybody together and all this other jazz... Where it was just like, I don't care. And, I mean, can we... I don't know if we want to jump right to this, because I don't even know how long we've been doing. But, like, as a person who doesn't know, I have a vague idea of Steppenwolf.
Yeah.
Beyond the musical incarnations.
Right behind the sound machine.
But, really crappy villain. Like, genuinely crappy... Low bar.
He felt like
Hellboy villain, basically.
He felt like a Marvel villain, or he more than anything, he kind of felt like the villain from Wonder Woman to me, where it's just like he has that, like, he's a bad guy, go hit him, and, like, he does have backstory, but the backstory is basically just what we've already been told in interviews, which is, like, he's trying to put the mother boxes together. And the backstory of the villain is actually more about the backstory of the universe they're building, where it's like, we have to integrate the Atlanteans and we have to integrate the Amazons.
Yeah. And that's fine. This, by the way, that, like, the biggest film that this compares to, like, it felt like a Hellboy film. And obviously it has some... Just the, like, we're starting to get into, like... The Legion, like Lord of the Rings.
It just
has, like, that sort of feel to it. And...
Which makes sense, because the new gods, the parademons and everything, like, they very much have that feeling of, like, okay, we're gonna give you, like, this quasi-mythical kind of... Yeah, pretty much, Dave. That's I am here to destroy. I mean, literally, like, his deal is the same thing that Darkseid's deal was in the recent comics, where on Earth 2, where you came here once, you got beat, and now it's his obsession.
Yeah.
And so...
It's almost like maybe it's a structural thing that mm-hmm. I would have rather had. I would have rather maybe had them, like, open with him, that grand battle yeah. of him getting beat by all these, you know, masses of crowds of yeah. different, everybody leeching together, and then jump to the present, as opposed to being told with voiceover.
It feels to me like that was probably how Snyder would have done it.
Yeah.
Instinctively, yeah. that's how it feels like he would have done it. And certainly, when you look at the battle between the gods and the Atlanteans and the Amazons and special guests, and Steppenwolf, that looks more than probably anything else in the movie yeah. like a Zack Snyder scene.
Yeah.
Like, you look at Zeus, and it's like, oh, was Gerard Butler not available today?
Yeah.
Because very clearly, like, it looks just like, you know, Gerard Butler in 300. Looks yeah. like the characters from Immortals, which I know he wasn't the director of, but he significantly inspired.
Yeah. And you know, and when it comes to the villain, too, or when it comes to Steppenwolf, I mean, but I realize we can... it's not so spoiler. But
just quick thing,
yeah.
Josh Hill just came in yep. and asked, he's running late, is it Russ's thumbs up and Zach's thumbs down? I would say mostly you're kind of thumb sideways and I'm thumbs
up.
Yeah,
yeah. But, you know, somebody, and so another film reviewer brought this up too, I think it was just a tweet. The CG was terrible.
Yeah, there were bits and pieces where it was Suicide Squad
video game
level.
I would
yeah.
say video game, like, you know, and not even, like, really good. Mm-hmm. Like, especially for the amount of close-ups, like, I assume he was completely CG Steppenwolf. It wasn't
It's weird, because he looks so much like Ciaran Hinds that I feel like if he was completely CG, then it was a weird choice for them to so yeah. closely map his face. It almost looks to me like it was, like, digitally enhanced prosthetics.
Yeah.
And that would make a lot of sense, because he looked so... he did not emote in most of the movie. And I kind of feel like if it's CG exclusively, yeah. it's bad CG.
And
if it's prosthetics that are enhanced, that's more understandable.
Yeah.
You know?
But then, I mean, just with what they can do with prosthetics and what they did,
yeah.
I mean, like... It certainly was better. I mean, I would say Doomsday was better than he was.
Yeah,
I
would agree, but I would also note that, like, a lot of people didn't think Doomsday was as good as we thought he was. Like, there was a lot of people. Who
well,
were
I mean,
like,
I don't.
Oh,
think,
he
I
like
don't,
the shit demon
I,
from Dogma.
I don't think he's tremendous. Yeah. I mean, I don't think he's that amazing.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, I think he's better
right.
than that. That was one of my. I think the CG one. And I don't understand, like, a lot of the matting, like, obviously green screening,
right.
not match on the mat, but like. Just one thing that I really noticed, when they were doing, like, the, I would assume, drone shots now, you know, or helicopter shots Wonder Woman's home planet, or home.
Themyscira.
Was terrible. Like, genuinely bad. And it, to the point where, like, I remember when the first Wonder Woman trailer came out, people were, like, tearing the CG a new one.
Right, right.
But then they fixed it, and it was actually quite good. But this was just, like, the combo of, like, the where you go from a green, like, from, like, kind of the trees or whatever beforehand. Like, it just didn't, like, blend. There was no... it was weird. And the one thing I will say, like, they did a crap ton of close-ups of Soup's face.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was, like, one of those that I'm, like, looking for it.
Right, right, right.
I feel like... It read like hell, like CG.
You could tell
his upper lip.
You could tell,
which is
often.
The whole
yeah.
like. And I'm like, you got to make sure that freaking works so much better.
It didn't. I mean, you could tell a handful of times. It didn't bother me that much, but I will say, it bothered me in one particular scene, which I can't talk about.
Yeah.
But there's a scene that he shares with Barry, where it was really obvious. And so, like that bugged me a little bit, because I was like, ah.
But it's just like, it's one of those, and it's like, I think one of the reasons why I'm harsher than I would necessarily be if, say, if this was a Marvel film
right.
or something like that, is because of the the ridiculous. Oh shit! I forgot. We spoiled. Oh. We spoiled it. Sorry. If you
we somehow missed all
the promotional trailer.
The thing that we said before we started recording was that we're gonna do a non-spoiler review so that more people can listen to it.
Yeah.
But that we were gonna just take as read that, you know what? It's not a spoiler that Superman comes back because like he's. Everybody
part of the
who
promotional.
Has a passing interest.
There's action figures.
Like, yeah. But I know Dave was kidding. But
yeah. No, I know. No, but what I was getting at is that I feel like I'm kind of harsher on it because I have, you know, I personally like have a lot more invested in this being good and being read well. And there's just so many things that I know if I was trying. If I hate the DC world and universe, I mean, like, you couldn't get the stash. You couldn't replace the stash well enough. I mean, because you know everyone's looking for that. Yeah. And so you got to at least pick that up. And it pisses me off that you have two of the, everybody can argue, two of the greatest directors in action world films.
Right.
And all of the things that I have problems with the film, like the dialogue blending well with the action scenes, the the CG blending just looking more natural, like it's all like that's kindergarten level stuff for both of these guys. They've all done this. They should know what is passable, what isn't. And I just feel like it got through. Again, go see the film. It's more than watchable. I'm just nitpicking because, like I said, right. I wanted it to be the better film,
which of course
everybody says it is. So I'm wrong. But
we talked about that. The fact that both of us really liked Man of Steel and BVS, and so both of us had there was a very tangible sense that this movie was going to overcorrect and change the tone, and so we thought like, this will probably be a movie that's more popular with everybody but us.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much where you came out of it.
But I mean, for me, it's, and first off, I feel like it's rushed. And again, if you're not looking for it, there's certain things, because they seem to do a lot of cleanup now on people's faces that are unnecessary, especially in big budget action films where they're like, oh, we got the budget, why don't we take that pimple out or whatever, do whatever. So there's always kind of a weird texturing of and also they're just in a green environment.
Yeah,
and if they're flying at the speed of light, you kind of have to add some things. But I'm saying is that the stash issue isn't that noticeable unless you're really looking for it. And kind of if you know the telltale signs of CG.
Yeah, yeah. Thing that you said about the green screen reminds me. There's one, and this is like not even a criticism, this is just an observation. There's a shot in this movie where it's a very bright shot, and there's definitely green screen around. And so I think because Affleck is like a pasty Irish bastard.
Yeah.
I think he probably had some green screen like reflecting off of his skin, which happens. That's happened to me. And so you end up with this weird uncanny valley effect.
Yeah.
And it looks like they had to replace him. And I'm just like, there's no way he's not standing in this shot. It's a shot that you're just like, there's literally no way that's not Ben Affleck, but it doesn't look like him because like,
it pisses me off that I'm like all that I'm doing is complaining about it. But could we have had maybe 8 or 10 less shots of them all standing together with the arms akimbo and everything?
A lot of
oh my god!
Actually, we're talking about this. I mentioned this to you in the movie, but this fascinates me. Like. Clearly they used plates to put Superman into like a bunch of his scenes because almost like half the scenes in the trailer are scenes that have Superman in them.
Yeah.
And like there are shots in it where you're just like literally, oh shit, that's a shot from the trailer that you have to literally look through Superman to see it.
Yeah.
It's uncanny. Like, and it actually wasn't done badly.
There seemed like there was a lot of, and that was like, again, the scene, like I think, really what set me off almost the entire film was that going along the lake scene, is that it was so long.
It's
unneeded.
People haven't seen it. This is not very spoilers.
Yeah, yeah.
It's an exposition scene between Bruce and Diana where they basically there's a chunk of the movie before Wonder Woman really joins in where Batman is trying to figure out what the mother boxes are.
Yeah.
And basically, the scene where Wonder Woman shows up and says, hey, there are these things called mother boxes, let me tell you about them.
Yeah. And as opposed to doing a, like, let's do it in front of the computers, or let's have, like, Barry explain it. Let's have somebody, you know, like, let's do it with something. It's literally, like, they're walking along a lake on a fall day in this, like, vaguely romantic, but also, like, vaguely, like, I was, this, like, why would you put it there? Like, why, it just looks like an ugly fucking lake.
I feel like, well, I mean, that's... like, that's
which it bothered me, too, or it's like, it's how the did lake, he not decide?
I think it's the lake that Wayne Manor's on.
Oh, yeah, right? No, it is. But you can, you don't know that. You can put it towards, and they could be walking anywhere on the planet, basically. But it like, it's not a, it's like,
if I
cut
had to,
grass up to a lake. Like,
if I had to guess...
remind me of upstate New York, and I'm like, which kind of is, I know, but...
I mean, if I had to guess, I would literally just say it was probably because... they came to a point where they're like, we have too many fucking scenes in the cave.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of stuff where, like, all the team meetings and all the prep and everything is in the Batcave because there's no Hall of Justice or anything. Yeah. And so I think, like, if to answer your question, why isn't it just in front of the computer screens? My guess is, literally at some point, somebody just said, we need to get out of the cave for a while.
Yeah, I mean, I get that, but I mean, I also, the reason that I'm saying in front of the computers, per se, is because then you can have visuals.
Yeah, no, I get
And
that.
So it's not them walking, and then these weird over-the-shoulder shots, and like, where they're talking to each other, it was, like, very first-year film school, like, kind of, I'm going to have a discussion.
That was my guess on that, and it didn't bother me. I thought it was fine, but I can understand why it would bother you.
It felt like reshoot.
It felt like reshoot. My guess is they wanted more Wonder Woman. This is Whedon stuff. And the reason that it feels kind of amateurish in comparison to a lot of the rest of the movie is because he shot it like a TV show.
Yep.
Like, he shot it, you know, a lot of just point-counterpoint kind of coverage.
Yeah.
And, like I said, it didn't bother me as much as it bothered you, but I can see what you're talking about.
It's so much, it just took me out of...
Yeah.
Because it was shot differently than Snyder would ever shoot a scene like that ever, you know, in the same way that like Michael Bay would never shoot, you know, I mean, like, it's just not
like the Bayhem thing of like there's got to be seven movie projects in a frame,
and it was just, I don't know, it was just so long, it felt so long and it felt so boring. I also feel like you could have almost chopped it. I think it goes back to my original problem with the, I don't think we need all this backstory,
right?
About a guy who,
for me, I didn't mind.
Is going to be sucked away by these terrible looking insect things.
Yeah. Part of it for me though is, and again, like, this is just me playing devil's advocate, and we're allowed to disagree. But I think when you had the situation with Batman v Superman, where one of the biggest, maybe not one of the biggest criticisms, I think most of the biggest criticisms were actually about tone and characterization, but one of the most credible complaints was about story structure and about the plot being kind of muddled and confusing at times. And again, like, I followed it fine, but I could see where it would have been confusing. This movie airs on the other, it goes the other way. Like, this movie, everything is really simple. It's laid out. It could almost be like a 1990s.
It's a straight fucking line. And that's one of the problems, is it's such a straight line. And you don't, and then it's like, you don't have that in film as much anymore. They had no two things going on at the same time in two different areas, at all in this film. I literally can't think of any. I mean, other than the opening sequence when Diana's doing something, but literally, like, they're almost having a conversation, like, they're about to have a conversation.
They did in the climactic fight. The fight, but again, the fight was very, like, you could tell that big fight was all Snyder.
But the other stuff isn't going on somewhere else. I'm sorry, it's all happening in that central location. You're not having, I mean, look, I don't want Pulp Fiction, where you have, like, all these intermingling, oh, wait, did that already happen, or that, whatever?
Right.
But, like, you don't have the build, like, the, this is actually... At some point, we got to try to get that guy from every painting on, because he was actually talking about that, talking about not having to do with the superhero films, talking about, like, you know, you got to build in one thing. The moment people get bored, you cut to the next one.
Right.
They literally didn't have that, because once all the guys got together, did they never really left each other? I mean, there's like a brief moment where maybe they go off that in that direction a little bit.
There is a counterpoint to that, which A, I don't think would be enough to kind of persuade you,
mm-hmm.
but B is kind of spoilery because now we're getting to the last 10 minutes of the third act.
Yeah, yeah.
So I will say I don't completely agree with you. I know what you're saying, and I don't mm-hmm. disagree completely either. But like, there is something else that I won't mention in a non-spoiler version of the podcast.
No spoilers.
Exactly. I would argue there is an element of that in the big final fight, just because there are two kind of, I won't even say dueling things that the team needs to do, but there are two different objectives that the team is
but
pursuing.
But they're all in the same.
I know they're all in the same.
No, I know, I get it. But especially when you can see one of them, if it didn't have such like mm-hmm. a short depth of focus, you could literally see one of them in another thing.
Right.
I don't think that has the Empire Strikes Back. It doesn't have the
right.
You know,
no, and
the
I
Lucas
get that
rule, which for that fight sequence, I don't think it needs it.
Right.
But I'm talking about it. That's a way that you build. Like I felt like there's too many of the boring kind of like let's explain this explainers. Along the way, because it went from that, and then it went from let's walk along the lake and talk to this, and then mm-hmm. let's stand in front of the computer and do this, and then let's do this, and then
I mean, maybe when I rewatch, I'll change. I don't remember like that wasn't the impression I got of the film.
Yeah.
And so, hi Michelle.
Hello.
One thing that David asked earlier on that I saw, but we were mm-hmm. talking about other stuff. Was Superman. Superman's screen time in this movie, I would say he's in about a third of it, give or take. He gets more narrative focused than most of the other characters, mm-hmm. But he doesn't get the same type of focus as the other characters. I think because some characters need their backstory explained. Like, I would say Superman has about the same amount of screen time as Cyborg, but he has an entirely different kind of screen time than Cyborg Cyborg, whenever he's on screen, it's all about him because like you have to find out what his deal is because he's never had a movie before.
Yeah.
With Superman, you have two movies before this, you know what his deal is, and the way that his screen time is used is very different from the way that like say Aquaman or Cyborg is. And that speaks to what you're talking about where like there's more exposition for characters like Aquaman. Like the places where you'll see a lot of exposition mm-hmm. for me was like when he went to Atlantis briefly.
Yeah.
We had a scene with Mara and that was like almost all exposition. Like she literally told him what apparently he didn't know about his origin.
Yeah.
And you're just like, okay. Yeah. And it didn't bother me, but I can see where it would bother you because like again, in the past, we've talked about how, like, one of the reasons that we liked the Snyder movies is because they didn't talk down to the audience. They kind of expected you to follow along.
Yeah.
And so having an exposition-heavy backstory for some of these mm-hmm. kind of characters, and again, it didn't bother me. Part of it is, honestly, this movie felt like I will say about Superman gets basically two big entrances.
Yeah.
And both are fairly effective. I liked the kind of second big entrance better.
Yeah.
But the first one was suitably impressive and also did what it needed to do narratively. Because obviously there is an element of like, when somebody comes back from the dead, that's a thing you have to address.
Yeah.
And so when Superman first comes back, it was a lot more story than character. And then you get some character right after.
Sorry. I just literally got a joke from the film. no, Soup's, not really spoily, but Soup's asking me, like, do you bleed?
Oh, yeah.
And then later on, like, it must have been like three or four. Was it? I don't even know. Was in that scene?
It was the very end of that scene.
He goes, oh, there's some bleeding.
Off.
Yeah. And I'm like, that was a cheap. Like, oh, that seemed kind of stupid, but okay, it's kind of funny. I'm like, ha-ha, now I get it. Only took me 2 hours later.
But, Yeah, I would say I think more people are going to like this movie Batman v Superman.
Yeah.
I think people who are really married to the visual and storytelling aesthetic of the DC Extended Universe might be disappointed that this is kind of the culminating element of Snyder's trilogy.
Yeah.
But I think that the average moviegoer is probably going to enjoy this one more.
Yeah.
It's a lot more straightforward. It's a lot brighter. All the things, you know, and again, like, we've kind of cycled out of Nolan and cycled back into this weird post-Guardians thing of, like, you know, and again, like, my favorite of the CW DC shows right now is Legends of Tomorrow because it's able to have, like, to not take itself super seriously. Yeah. And I will say it doesn't, I don't feel like that feeling, I feel like that feeling is a lot dicier on film than on TV because, like, film is an event and you only get it every so often. And so you want to kind of take yourself seriously because you don't want to undercut your message and then have to wait 2 years to buy it back.
Yeah.
But I think that they, I think that tonally they managed to balance it reasonably well in here. I think it was obviously a very delicate balancing act because you had two different directors with two very different visions and probably two different, very different sets of marching orders.
Yeah. Which I don't think we've addressed it, but because your phone's about to run out of battery. But is it Batista? Who's the Flash?
Oh, Ezra Miller.
Ezra Miller. Why am I thinking Batista?
Batista is the guy from Blade Runner and Guardians.
Oh, interesting.
Drax.
I don't know. I'm thinking of someone else completely. Anyway, he's fantastic.
Yeah.
I think definitely up to because I mean. Okay.
Yeah.
Not the current incarnations or the current timing in whatever season we're on in Flash, but like just as good as the original.
Like season one.
Season one Flash. Like I like he has that ability to do the banter that Flash has. You know.
I was really interested by what they did with him. I actually liked him better than I liked Aquaman.
Yeah.
Which was surprising because Aquaman, like, stands out so much in the trailers, and you're like, oh, yeah, this is going to be fun. But unfortunately, like, everything interesting he does is in the trailers, which, I mean, it doesn't make him less fun as a character, but it does undercut the impact because it's like, oh, literally everything was in the trailer.
Yeah. He also doesn't, I mean, doesn't have that, I'm kind of surprised that he doesn't have the same presence that I thought he was going to, like, based on the trailer.
Right, yeah.
Just, you know, like, screen presence that he kind of needed to have in the same way as, you know, well, actually, like, Batista. Just thinking, like, big guys.
Yeah,
like, the way that, like, he doesn't, if you ever see, like, a movie with The Rock, like, The Rock has a, like, obviously has a physical presence because he's a big freaking guy. But he also has a presence in a scene. Yeah. Your eye draws, not just because of but just, you know, it's like that magnetism or whatever. Yeah. Like, he didn't really have that, and I'm like, how does he not have it? It's like,
if
he has all the kind of, like, things of needing it, and it just wasn't there.
Here's my thing on that. I don't disagree with you entirely, but I think the reason for that is kind of that, like, when you look at, say, Guardians, the Guardians stuff, like, the Guardians cast are, by and large, not, like, amazing physical specimens other than Zoe.
Yeah.
And so Batista is able to kind of stick out like a sore thumb because he's like, ah, and he's like so deviant from what the rest of what we see on screen.
Yeah.
Whereas with this one, it's like you're standing up against like Ben Affleck in his super steroid version.
I'm not even thinking of the actual physical. Like he doesn't have
the... But I think that that's like, I think that you're like...
Yeah.
He's standing up against a bunch of blockbuster actors who, like, are at the top of their game and the, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, but I'm thinking more of a something that's not as, like, just his physical, like presence, but is more of a kind of, like, a, I don't know, you know, like, the dynamic, you know, like, that actor that, like, just no matter if he's small, could be a small person, could be a big person, is able to draw in. And I thought just, like, you know, I mean, just... Within the trailer, he has that scene, and I think that, and I think again, I think it goes back to possibly what you were saying, where almost all Michelle disagrees, says his best scene wasn't in the trailer. But
I'm
almost,
trying to think of a full scene that he was in that wasn't in the trailer.
Yeah,
like not being sarcastic.
Sky, thing. Like, you know what I did one thing, and I can't decide whether I enjoyed it or not. Is that a lot of the. And I don't know whether they're spoilers or not, but so I won't say them. But there's so many running gags within with a lot of these characters And the jokes, like there's a scene from I think the Justice League cartoon where Batman is falling and he's the only one who can't fly.
Oh yeah.
And I don't know if you know the scene, but literally it's like it's a GIF, like a very popular GIF, and that was obviously to some level riffed on in this film, which I thoroughly enjoyed. And I
think that's the thing. Like this movie, very much felt like. Where he saves the schooner. There was a lot of things in this movie. This is what I meant by the fan service stuff. It's like, we talked about the music, but it's not just the music. It's like, there's elements in here that definitely call back to, like, previous incarnations of things, and, like, there's catchphrases that that wouldn't have been at home in previous versions of this. You know, and I think the tonal dissonance of the Whedon stuff allows them to get away with that a little bit more, because it's like you get the jokiness, you get the colors, you get the things that hadn't really been present in BVS.
Yeah.
And so like that last line that I was saying, I'm 90% sure Zack Snyder had it in his outline, and it's like this is what we're building towards. To me, without this movie making kind of the hard turns that it did, it wouldn't have worked, because it would have felt too on the nose and too hokey.
Yeah.
And to whatever. It was really like the changes. And again, like some of those changes are probably from.
Oh, that ship. Okay. Yeah.
Sorry.
For podcast listeners, you can go back to, is this Emerald City? Video podcast Facebook page, and you can watch this.
Yeah, you can
read the comments that we're occasionally commenting on. Yeah. So if we say something or go off on a side jag that you guys don't understand, then that's why. So, but yeah, but yes, no, that was a really great scene.
That was a good scene. I don't want to say anything else about it, because
it was a very Guardians of the Galaxy scene, which is why honestly liked a lot. But also, it's not this world. I don't know. And again, I have to give up the. I think at this point I have to give up the. I really, really like the dark and moody Batman and the whole thing like that. Yeah, this kind of world, you know, I have to give it up, I guess, because it's over.
For me, it tends to be it's piece by piece, and I still think of the films as like the film is the thing.
Yeah.
Like the extended universe is nice, but the film is the thing. And like for this movie, I felt like the tonal shifts mostly worked. There were elements that were a little bit wonky, but I thought it mostly worked.
Yep.
And I don't think, like, I think that a lot of people are going to say, and I've seen some critics on Twitter and stuff say, oh, well, the tonal shifts in this movie further repudiate BVS and, you know, just show that the critics were right and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, I don't think that's true at all. Because, like, without BVS, this movie doesn't work.
Yep.
Like, it's a, one thing that is really nice is that this feels. If it wasn't for the fact that it's Justice League, this feels very much like the culminating chapter of the trilogy that started with Man of Steel. Like, there are big chunks of this that are just carrying forth themes that ran through those first two movies. That was the stuff I liked best, actually. There's a scene with Superman, and I don't really want to say anything more than just there's a scene with Superman. But there's a scene between Superman, Lois, and a third character that, to me, was kind of the emotional core of Superman's whole arc. You know, and that one really worked for me, and I was pleased to see that they, like, dealt with it.
Mm-hmm.
I would be curious to see what the Blu-ray is going to yield in terms of deleted scenes and in terms of blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Because, like, I do think this movie, and it's... Like I said, you said that you didn't like the pacing, but runtime-wise, it's just significantly shorter than the previous two.
Yeah.
And it'll be interesting to see what ended up on the floor. I know there was a rumor that, like, this was a Warner Brothers edict that they wanted a movie under 2 hours so they can get more screenings.
Yeah.
And again, like, I feel like this one didn't need to be more than 2 hours, because you're sitting here going at an hour and 48 minutes or whatever it was.
Yeah.
They did, like, again, like, I liked it a lot. Whether you, like, loved it or not, like, it was a very straightforward narrative, so they managed to hit every spot they didn't need to have, you know.
Yeah.
We'll have to talk about it again in a week or something.
Yeah.
Because, again, like, I
it almost might be worth going to see it again to... because it's also because it's like one of the first films that we've distinctly, I mean, still not distinctly disagreed.
Yeah.
It's not like I hated the film. Right, exactly. Like I said, I'm not giving it a thumbs down. I'm giving it a side, you know, but, and that has more to do with my own personal disappointments. With,
and like, again, we kind of talked about, like, we talked about the fact that those were likely to happen going in.
Well, I'm talking about things like the mustache. Yeah. I mean, just like the cheap things that I know that people who want to hate on the DC series, because like, you know, I don't Marvel doesn't need any defenders.
Yeah.
It never does. It's gonna they
it's very true that the series is not
anyway.
I haven't seen that series.
But you know, it's like they could literally lay a dump in the theater and it's gonna make $800 million, it doesn't matter or whatever. But DC, you know, the little production company that could. But they get shit on for like, they'll do the exact same thing that Marvel does, and then they'll get shit on for being, well, they're just trying to be Marvel now. And it's like, okay, well, we've literally gotten to that point. And okay, so it's like, they can't do anything right. You're going to hate the films anyway, so why the hell are you?
And that's really, this isn't Wonder Woman. This isn't a movie that is going to be revelatory for a lot of people and that is going to change your mind on anything.
Yeah.
If you go in thinking you're going to dislike this movie, probably you're going to dislike this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
If you go in thinking you're going to like this movie, probably you'll at least like go, oh, that was fun.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know.
See, I almost went the other way, like where I was like, I thought I was going to love this film. Mm-hmm. And the fact that I was only like, okay.
Yeah. No, I get that.
You know, it's kind of like, I mean, like on the opposite, like with Thor, I was like, I'm going to hate this film for many different reasons.
Yeah.
And then I ended up liking it quite a bit, but I think it was like...
Yeah.
If I didn't come in with any expectations, I probably would have fucking loved that film.
Yeah.
But I also still feel like Thor was like, oh, we saw Guardians did really well.
Let's do
that. But anyway.
I mean, it's the most transparent.
I've been bashing DC the entire time, so I have to bash some Marvel. Can we talk about Civil War for about 5 minutes?
Michelle just came in.
Exactly.
But I would say definitely go see it. It's a movie that's worth seeing. It's a lot of fun. Like I liked it a lot. I don't really do grades because as soon as I do, it becomes a thing of me overthinking it. Like, I would, like, for me personally, just on the first viewing, and probably it won't age as well as some of the other movies. Mm-hmm. Like, here's the thing. I think that BVS and Man of Steel both get better with each viewing because there's so much shit packed into those movies that you see stuff that you missed before, and it enriches the experience.
Yeah.
This movie, I don't think that'll happen. I think, like, for me, it's like an A-, B-plus because I had a really good time at the movie theater. But, like, I think if I go see it again, it'll probably drift down into the B range because, like, I don't honestly think it's a great film.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a good film, and it's, for a lot of people, I think it's the movie that they're going to, that they want.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I would say absolutely go see it.
Yeah, see, I mean, yeah. I think that it might be worth it, in a week or something like that, if we have an opportunity to go see it again.
Yeah, if we can...
I think that it may actually be the opposite way for me because a lot of the original expectations of what I wanted
were washed away,
and now I get to kind of see it as a blank slate.
Yeah.
You know, and kind of in the way that, like, after I saw the, when I saw the DVD cut or whatever, the director's cut or whatever they ended up calling it.
The ultimate cut, for
BVS.
Well, the only reason I know is because there was, for Watchmen, there was a director's cut.
But I ended up kind of self-admitting that the first one had more flaws than I wanted to admit.
No.
And I liked it more, and I think that this one, hopefully maybe I'll have that as well.
I had a similar experience, because I actually enjoyed it in theaters, and then, like, I'll probably never watch the theatrical cut again, because having seen the ultimate cut, it's like, that it is so much better when it's clear. Because again, a lot of it was just narrative disjunction, and so, like, if I followed it, I was like, oh, people are stupid if they don't follow. And then I watched the actual coherent version, and I'm like, that's not true. I was just kind of smart.
Well, it's just, I mean, the fact that you don't have to know any of the backstory
for
that one, it's like, for our generation yeah. growing up. And my only thing was the occasional confusion. I'm like, wait, that's not how Doomsday. Anyway, but you know, that sort of yeah. thing where it's like, no, but I wanted that version.
Yeah,
damn it.
Yeah.
Why couldn't Jurgens just have written the script?
They're doing an animated movie that's going to be.
I want the real version.
I know. I know.
But, well, of course, then you know what? Give it 10 years. And this is what I always say about all these films, yeah. whether it be Superman or Batman. I don't like this version. I don't like this thing. Give it 10 years.
Yeah.
Or if you're Spider-Man, give it
three
weeks. But I think that Dave hit it on the head with his original comment where we need three versions. We need a DVD box set of that. I will buy that. I will pre-order it right now. $75. I don't give a shit. I forgot I can swear on this one. My other podcast, I can't swear. So. But.
Dave,
oh, yeah. Yeah. We're through another one too. Also, now he's 9 years old.
And Aunt May is 20.
Aunt May's 20, exactly. Yeah, because we have to just keep getting younger and younger. I actually wouldn't mind a elementary school.
There you go, like the little Archie little, version.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Like the littlest, the littlest Spidey. Yeah.
I want an animated feature film for Peter Parker, or Peter Porker Spider-Ham.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
All right. Well, we're gonna wrap on that note, mostly yeah. because the camera's gonna die in yeah. any minute now. But thank you very much for listening. Thank you, David and Michelle and Josh, for tuning in with us. And we'll try to take a look at this again. Maybe yeah. not necessarily next week, but we'll do a spoiler. Yeah. podcast where we can get into a little bit more nuts and boltsy stuff once the movie is not out yet in parts of the country. So thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon.
Bye.